This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Do you want to set your child up for success? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way with positive feedback.
Well, I know with Eleanor, when she was struggling so much with math, if she had been able to do online learning at home, she would have been much better able to keep up with class, and that would have just made the whole situation much easier for her. Don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Happier listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/happier. Visit IXL.com/happier to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast that gives you strategies and solutions for building happier habits into your daily life. This week is a very special episode, and we are going to be talking about relationship advice that we gathered from listeners. We'll also be talking to Lori Gottlieb, the author of the blockbuster bestseller, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, about her advice for relationships. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister, Elizabeth Kraft. And Elizabeth, my relationship with you is one of the happiest in my life.
Aw, that's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in Los Angeles. And yeah, Gretch, I have to say, all the relationship advice you've given me has made me happier. So thank you.
Now, before we jump into all this excellent advice that we gathered from listeners, there's an update. Some listeners wrote in to let me know, and I have to say that once people pointed it out, it seemed quite obvious that Second Date Update, which is a podcast that I gave a gold star to, is fake. That it is fake, that those are scripted, that those are actors pretending to be people calling in. And it's like so many of these things, once somebody said it's fake, I was like, of course it is, because how would they get permission to put people's voices on the air? Why is it that they're so consistent? I'd actually look to see information about how they actually did the production of the show, because I was like, this must be so hard to pull off. How could they possibly do it? Well, they pulled it off because the whole thing is just like a giant skit. So I feel very credulous, but anyway, yes.
Well, it's still entertaining, but it's not as entertaining when it's not real people.
Yeah, because I thought it was sort of an insight into human nature, and now it's right. Just sort of like, you know, kind of a funny little skit. Anyway, on to relationships. And this was so fun. People had such great suggestions for terrific relationship advice.
Yeah. And Gretchen, it's funny because we said, give us, you know, advice about any kind of relationship. Most of the advice we got was about romantic relationships, but the same principles apply to just about every relationship, we realized.
Yeah. Maybe it's the proximity to Valentine's Day that got people focused on romantic relationships. But yeah, it's all very widely applicable. And by the way, as we're going through, I'm going to do an entire post of the advice, and I'll post it on my website in addition to the usual show notes. And I will link to that post in the show notes. So if you hear a lot of good ideas or you're listening in a place where you can't take notes, don't worry. It'll be very easy to look up everything later.
Yeah. And Gretchen, there were some big themes that emerged from the advice people sent in. So we thought, let's go over those themes first.
Yeah. These were ideas that many, many, many people raised. So one was, don't take your sweetheart for granted. really say out loud how much you appreciate all that this person does. And along the same lines, show consideration and courtesy for this person. Just sort of ordinary courtesy goes a long way.
It's like you want to treat the person you're in a relationship with as well as you treat a stranger.
Which, by the way, research shows that people don't, that they are much nicer to strangers and friends than they are to their romantic partners. Another one, this is important for me. Don't keep score. I am a real scorekeeper.
I think that's a hard one for a lot of people.
Here's an interesting one. Many people said that we should let the sun go down on our anger. This is very true for me. I find that if I go to bed angry, a lot of times I wake up in the morning and after a good night's sleep, I have so much more perspective and I'm just not angry anymore. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people said, don't try to fight it out at midnight. Wait until the next morning and things might seem different.
Yes, I've never understood that, like, never go to bed angry, like, fight until you make up. It's like, well, that just doesn't work.
It doesn't end well.
This is a good one. Don't criticize your sweetheart to other people.
Yes, many people emphasize it's important to have a feeling of friendship as well as romantic attraction. You've got to enjoy just sort of hanging out with the person and talking to them.
And then communicate, which interestingly means both speak up and listen. I think it's easier to talk than to listen sometimes.
Yeah. But sometimes it's hard to talk too and to say like what you want and what's on your mind. So yeah, that's important. And then also to assume the best intentions, really assume the best, because that's hard sometimes in a relationship.
Yeah.
Now, different advice will resonate with different people. So we are going to go through a lot of different ideas, but we're going to kick it off with the best advice we've ever received. So Elizabeth, what's the best relationship advice you've ever received?
The best advice I got was from a friend, my friend Ellie's stepfather. This was in college. One summer, we were visiting her mom and stepfather in Maine, I think it was, or New Hampshire. I don't even remember. I just know we were on like a country road and we were driving with her stepfather. And I have no idea what we were talking about, but he said, marriage is all about what you don't say. And at the time, I was like, what? Because I, being, you know, like 19, thought, no, a good relationship is all about being able to say every single thing that's on your mind, total honesty, don't hold back. Now, I, years later, realize, that was amazing advice, because it's really true that so often what you don't say is more important than what you do say.
I remember a while back you said how you no longer ask Adam how much a plant costs. You're just I just trust in him that he's not going to go crazy, and it just brings down the mood if I'm constantly like raising this. And so it's partly just not saying, wow, how much did that rhododendron cost or whatever?
Yes. Even though a lot of times I'm literally just curious, it's not a statement on, he takes it as
criticism.
I'm judging it, but I'm really not. I'm just curious, but I've realized, well, if he's going to take it that way, let me just not ask.
Right. It's what you don't say. You took your own advice.
What you don't say. I'm trying. Yeah. I'm trying. And by the way, Gretchen, you know, I have like such a huge relationship with Sarah, my writing partner, and I think we have gotten much better at not saying things to each other, especially if one of us is just in a bad mood for whatever reason. I think the other now is really good at just letting that person be in a bad mood and like letting it ride and not trying to comment on it.
Or take it personally or let it become a distraction.
Or be like, what's wrong? Or just like let it ride.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but what about you? What's the best advice you've gotten?
Well, it's interesting because this one half came from our mother, one half came from our father, and it's unusual because they rarely make this kind of comment, and I think that's why I remember this so clearly, because it was really quite uncharacteristic of each of them to say this, and they made these comments very close in time to each other, which made it have more of an impression on me. I wonder if they'd had a conversation themselves that this was kind of in reaction to, even though I didn't know that part of it. But Mom said, in a relationship, it's important that a person be kind, because eventually if he's not kind to other people, he won't be kind to you. And again, it's like not the kind of thing she usually says. And then Dad said, it's important in a relationship that the other person can have fun, because you're not going to have a happy life with somebody who's not able to have fun. And I think that's great advice. You have to have kindness and you have to have fun.
That is really good advice.
Yes. So I try to both be kind and fun. I do fine, but I can do better with both.
I could do better with both as well. As always, though, mom and dad are like, they have the wisdom.
They have the wisdom. So now let's hear from listeners. We got so many. Now, many of these, we have the names, but sometimes when they came off Instagram, I don't have the person's name. So if we don't say the name, it's because I couldn't really figure out what your name was, even though your advice was great. First one comes from someone named Jamie, who said, a patient once told me that the key to marriage is never to be mad or quit on the same day as your partner. Good advice.
Good advice. Kate says, I heard this recently and it stuck with me. Don't confuse roommate problems with relationship problems. Living with other people is hard. I leave tea bags in the sink, much to my husband's annoyance. He wears shoes in the house. It's easy to let these little irritations become bigger problems, but we have a great relationship and he's amazing, supportive, kind, loving, reliable, responsible, fun, a great dad, etc.
Yeah, so it's not a relationship problem. It's a roommate problem.
Yes.
Michelle said, in college, I took a class called Sociology of Marriage and Family. The professor taught us all the stats on marriage and relationships that you might expect. But of all that I learned from that semester about 20 years ago, one statement has stuck with me. Time will never hurt a good relationship. I took that to mean the longer you're together, the stronger you should and could be. True.
I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah.
Lindsay says, during my first year of marriage, a mentor at work gave me advice that works in many types of relationships. Quality control owns the task, meaning you're not allowed to critique how someone else gets a job done, at least to a certain degree. Whether it's an email to a client or your partner loading the dishwasher or combing your child's hair, if you can't handle how they're doing it, then you either need to learn to let go or do it yourself. Yes. You've made this point many times,
yes.
Gretchen.
I'm a big believer in that. And related, this came from Instagram. Someone wrote, if it matters to me, then it's my responsibility. I can't expect him to take care of things that are important to me and not important to him. I have to remind, he gets frustrated and I wind up doing it anyway. That's what I've learned. It's like, yeah. You know, if you care a lot, deal with it.
Do it yourself.
Yeah.
Someone else says, the power of physical love gestures. Sometimes you don't have to argue who is right or wrong. I think that's one big thing that is so different from friendship with one's friends. You can simply show your love with physical gestures, and many times the hard feelings will go away.
Yeah, I read research that said, like, if you're having an argument, try to hold hands or like hug before, because by having that physical connection, it often helps people stay calmer and get less defensive. And so, you know, just that kind of loving gesture can really go a long way.
Of course, the problem is getting the other person to hold your hand or have that hug when they're feeling mad.
Yeah, that's
true. It takes two people deciding that when they're not mad.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Gail said, when I got engaged, my dad told me that there would be days, weeks, months, or possibly even years when I wouldn't feel like being married to my future husband anymore, but I should stick it out and it'll get better, and I'd be so grateful that I didn't act on those feelings. I have found it to be true and the best advice I ever got.
That's profound.
Yes, yes.
Someone else says, the greatest relationship advice I've ever heard is actually from the TV show Parks and Rec, one of your favorites.
I love Parks and Rec.
One of the characters, Anne, Rashida Jones, is having a bad day, and her always positive boyfriend, Chris, Rob Lowe, tries to solve all of her problems, which only seems to frustrate Anne more. Eventually, Chris gets the advice he needs from two other characters, which is simply to say, darn, that stinks. The point is that sometimes you just need to let the person know, hey, that really stinks, and I'm sorry that's happening to you. Don't try to fix it in that moment. It's amazing. Most of the time, that's all someone needs to hear.
Yeah, and this is great advice, too, because it sort of takes the pressure off you, because you don't, you know, you're just like, I'm just responding.
Of course, this is a classically male-female thing, Gretchen, just to overgeneralize. Many times people say men want to fix problems and women just want them to listen.
Well, I got to say, I want to fix problems constantly. This is a huge thing for me. Yeah. It's the happiness bullying me. I just rush
it
in.
It is. You do want to fix problems. Oh, my gosh. And you don't. You'll offer 10 different solutions. You don't stop with one or two.
No, and I'll email you the next day, too.
Yes.
So you know, I need this advice, which is from Michelle, by the way. Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
And then from Instagram, this is short but very powerful. Marry someone you admire and who admires you.
That's good.
Yeah.
Julie says, I always need to say yes to his parents about all things, and he needs to be the one to say no. I can say sure, even when I mean no way, and then I can tell him the situation, and he can tell his own parents no or amend the situation. Sons and daughters can handle their parents way better than a spouse can, especially a new spouse or fiance. Well, that's very practical advice to keep smooth relations. Yep. I think that's wise.
I think it's very wise. Kaylee says, not so much advice, but information. I still credit Better Than Before for setting our marriage up for success. I'm an upholder and my husband is a questioner, just like you guys. Yes, that's Jamie and I are that combo. I feel that understanding that my husband's questions aren't criticisms has completely changed how I view our relationship and saved us from a lifetime of misunderstanding. So thank you. Oh, that's so nice, Kaylee. Thank you. Hey, that's so nice.
Nice job, Gretchen. Linda says, you don't have to apologize for something you didn't say.
Yes, good point. Megan says, the best advice I've ever gotten is to not expect your partner to read your mind. We just talked about this recently. Sometimes it's not romantic to have to spell out exactly what you want or expect for an anniversary or birthday or whatever, but it's a lot more romantic than being disappointed and building resentment. True.
Yes. So much good advice, and there is more to come. Coming up, we'll talk about relationships with Lori Gottlieb, a therapist and author of the bestseller, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. But first, this break.
The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe without spending a fortune, and luckily I found Quince. Elizabeth, I got the Flow Knit wide leg pant. It's very light. It's perfect for the summer. It packs very easily. I recently went on a trip with my family and I took it with me, and they were just the thing to wear on a really hot day where I wanted to be covered up, but I wanted something that looked great and also was very comfortable.
And the best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Gretchen for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Gretchen to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Gretchen.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and free. And, you know, Elizabeth, I now work with a team, and hiring the right people is so important. It's maybe the most important thing. And LinkedIn makes the process of identifying and hiring people easy and intuitive. I know that when I've been hiring for my team, it's hard to find quality candidates to interview. And LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn.
Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, listeners had such great suggestions about relationship advice, but we also thought maybe we should talk to an expert.
Yeah, Gretch, we're talking to Lori Gottlieb. Lori is a psychotherapist and the author of several New York Times bestselling books, including her latest blockbuster, which I absolutely love. It's called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, A Therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed, which, by the way, is being adapted into a TV series. I can't wait to watch that.
Yes. And in addition to her clinical practice, Lori writes the Atlantic's weekly Dear Therapist advice column, and she contributes regularly to the New York Times and many other publications. And she gave a TED Talk in 2019. I'll include a link to that in the show notes. In this most recent book, which I also love, we both raced through it, and Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, she writes about what she sees with her patients in therapy, and she also writes about what she learned from being in therapy herself. Because Lori started seeing a therapist when the man she thought she would marry unexpectedly broke up with her. So, Lori, thank you so much for coming into the studio here in New York with us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Hi, Lori.
Hi, Liz.
Poor Elizabeth off in LA.
I know. Lori, we're talking about relationships today, and you talk obviously to a lot of people. What are some of the most common mistakes we make with the people in our lives?
You see the same thing over and over again, probably, right?
Right, right. You know, I think that one of the mistakes in relationships that people make is they think that the problem is the other person.
Yes.
And we all do that. I'm guilty of that too. You know, I think that what they come into couples therapy and they'll say, you know, here's the problem. And basically, you know, he's doing this or she's doing this. And they don't look at what their own role in the situation is.
Well, in your book, you talk about how often people go into therapy thinking that they're going to kind of recruit someone to their side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now they can gang up.
Right.
And then you experienced that yourself when you went into therapy, that you were like, I need to convince you of how right I am and how wrong someone else was.
Well, that's right. In fact, I thought I had an ironclad case. So I was convinced that, in fact, the whole reason I went to go see this therapist was I thought he's absolutely going to agree with me that the boyfriend who broke up with me was completely wrong.
Right.
And I was shocked when he didn't do that. But I think a lot of people do that. They come in and they want the validation of an outside person to say, see, you're right and the other person is wrong and the other person needs to change.
So how do we overcome that? That kind of tendency to see things from our own, argue our own case and not see that someone else has a case.
Well, I think we have to remember that our stories are skewed. So we're unreliable narrators in a lot of ways. And we think that we're telling the objective truth. And we are telling the truth, but the truth as we see it.
Yes.
So, you know, when we tell the story, there are certain things we're leaving in, there are certain things we're leaving out, where, you know, we're making our role sound maybe a little more cleaned up than it is.
Yeah.
Or maybe we're just not aware of how we're contributing to the situation.
Right. Or something's really important to us and it just doesn't matter to someone else. And so we think, how could you ignore this or be so inconsiderate about this? But to somebody else, it's like, this is just not a big deal. I don't value it. So I don't see this as something that is important to respect.
Right. And people take it so personally when someone doesn't have the same ideas about something that they do. They feel like, well, you don't care about me or you don't love me. Mm. And it's not that. It's that you're two different people with two different ideas about the world and yourselves and each other.
And is this true for just any relationship? It's not just like your romantic partner, right? This is probably true of mothers and daughters and friends and business partners.
Oh, yeah. And especially, I would say, you know, in families, you see this all the time where people don't understand how the other person can think, feel, do or not do certain things. But you also see it with friends and you also see it in, you know, in the workplace.
So are there some concrete things that we can do or like a mantra we can invoke or an exercise we can do in our head to try to get us out of that kind of egocentric perspective?
I think a great exercise is to imagine that you're telling the story from the other person's point of view. And what you want to do is you don't want to keep having your own story sneak into the other person's point of view. You want to really imagine a clean version of their story. If this is what they were going to say is happening from their perspective, you don't have to agree with it. But what do you think they think is going on? And it will give you a lot more compassion for what they're going through, because all of a sudden you say, oh, that person also feels unseen, unheard, slighted, whatever it might be.
Well, this reminds me, because I was a lawyer and I saw a million briefs. And what was so striking is that you would read a brief and you'd be like, this is 100% convincing. Mm-hmm. The law, the facts, everything is on the side. I'm absolutely convinced this is a slam dunk. And then you'd read the other brief and you'd be like, oh my gosh, they would be using the same basic facts, the same law. And it would look completely different and leading you to the exact opposite conclusion. And you could see how skillful people can make great arguments with the same material by what they highlight and how they present.
Right. That's why when people come to couples therapy, I tell people I'm not here to arbitrate.
Right.
Because you're both right.
Right.
I mean, the fact is that it's like they each came in with this brief and very convincing ones. And they're both right. And yet, it doesn't matter because they're both not seeing the other person's point of view.
Well, this seems
I
like
I already feel like my marriage is going to be better. I'm already in my head arguing my husband's side of punctuality because that's what we fight about.
Yeah,
so
they fight a lot.
This is good for me.
That's good. So one of the things that comes up all the time that seems to be the root of so many issues is listening. How do we listen better? Now, obviously, as a therapist, you're trained to listen, and it's at the heart of the job. But how can we as lay people listen better?
The most important element for listening is empathy. So it's not just hearing the content of what they're saying. So there's that sort of, cliche of somebody saying, here's what I feel, and the person repeating back, I hear you say, kind of robotically, that person's not going to feel like they were taken in or heard.
Yeah.
So we call it feeling felt. So when you're listening to someone, you want to make the other person feel felt. And that means that when you're listening, it's not just what they're saying, but it's how do you feel about them as they're saying it? Can you put yourself in their shoes? Can you imagine what they're feeling as they're telling you this? That's a really important ingredient in listening.
So saying something like, wow, it seems like you're feeling really frustrated or like that?
Well, that feels really robotic, right? So, I mean, you can say that, but it feels like, yeah, you're just repeating what I said. It's something emotional that's happening inside you when you're listening. It's not what you're doing for in front of the other person. It's more about an internal process for you as you listen.
Right.
That you, instead of thinking like, well, that's not right, or no, that detail wasn't exactly right, that is often what's going through our heads when someone is telling us something, especially when we're involved in it.
Right, when there's some kind of conflict.
Yeah. And so it's more about, I'm going to imagine what it's like right now for this person to tell me that and what their experience is. And then you're going to hear them better.
Right.
Well, that's a good technique.
Right, like this person is telling me something that is very difficult for them to say. So they're probably feeling very exposed.
Right. They feel very, it's very fragile for them.
Yes, right.
They're feeling very vulnerable.
Right, right. That's good advice.
And Lori, obviously we talk on this show about how relationships are the key to a happy life. And of course, many people go into therapy trying to address the issues they have in an important relationship. But the question we have is the relationship with a therapist itself is so important. What advice would you give as a person who's been in therapy and as someone who's a therapist about what we should look for in our relationship with our therapists? Are there red flags or good signs? Like, because, it's so hard to know who's right for you.
That's right. And I think people don't realize that. They think, I'm going to go to a therapist and I'm going to get in that room and then I'm in therapy. And that's just not true. The first session is almost like dating. It's about seeing how that fit works. And in fact, the most important factor in the success of your therapy, more than the therapist's training, the modality they're using, the number of years they've been doing this, which are all important, but the most important factor is your relationship with that therapist.
Right.
So it's so important. So when you go in for a first session, you want to see, how do I feel with this person? Did I feel understood? Do I feel like this person gets me as much as someone can get you in an initial meeting? And if so, I would go back. But again, it doesn't mean you're in therapy with that person. It's going to take a few sessions, maybe even a couple of months, before you really know, this is where I want to do the work.
As a therapist, do you ever say to somebody, I don't think that we're going to be a good fit?
Absolutely.
You do?
Yes.
So you will say like,
oh, wow.
And what
makes
I'm sure you have
that?
A delicate way of saying
that. Yeah, I was going to say, that's not exactly the tone or the words that I use.
As if.
But no. But that is the message.
Right.
It's like, no, we're breaking up.
Yeah.
No, I don't say that.
Right.
But I do tell people, whether or not I think I can help them.
Right.
And if I feel like I'm not the best person to help that person, I will tell them because I don't want to waste their time.
Right.
And sometimes it's because what they're coming in with is not something that I feel like I'm the best person to help them with.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's because I can tell in that first session that maybe they're not ready for the kind of work that I have people do. And if they're not wanting that, even though they might think they do, and I can tell pretty early on, then I might suggest that maybe this isn't going to be a good working situation for them.
That's interesting. Now, one of the things that was really compelling in your book is you wrote about how in your own therapy, yourself as a, you know, in the hot seat, you hid the fact that you were like haunted by the fact that you had this book due and you weren't working on it, and that you had this undiagnosable chronic illness that you were trying to figure out what was going on, and you hid that.
Yes.
So, and this is not uncommon. We often will hide crucial information from the people who are very close to us and the people who with whom we feel like we can turn to for help and advice and are clearly on our side. Why do you think we do that?
I think the things that we hide are the things that we feel the most shame around. And so these were things that, you know, I couldn't tell anybody about because I just was bathed in shame around them. And I see that with my own patients, and you see that in the book with several of the patients I write about where they're not telling me things. They're hiding things from me.
Yes.
And when they come out, you see sort of why they were hiding it. And also, I think there's, you know, a gender difference that I noticed too, which is that men will come in so many times and they'll say, you know, I've never told anybody this before, when they're finally going to tell you the thing that they haven't been telling you. And, you know, and then the thing that they tell me often feels so, it doesn't feel that vulnerable to me. And I think, wow, I feel so much compassion for them because I feel like, wow, there's not a person in the world you could tell this thing to that doesn't feel that deep to me. And then when they get into it, it gets very deep. Women will come in and they'll say, you know, I've never told anyone this before, except for my mother, my sister, and my best friend.
So they've had
maybe 1 to 3 people that they've been able to tell their secret to, even though it took them a while to tell it to me.
Right. Well, it's interesting because in the case of your secrets, it wasn't like no one in the world knew because you were going from doctor to doctor. You had a whole kind of group of people who were like theoretically involved in the book. So it was like a
secret. No one knew about the book.
I thought it was under contract.
It was. And so no one knew that I wasn't writing it.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. No one knew.
The book wasn't a secret. It was the lack of progress that was the secret. That's right. Okay. I remember that now. Okay. Right. So that's what the secret was. Right.
Yeah. No one knew. And everyone would always say, how's the book? It's going fine. So literally nobody knew.
And did it help when you finally revealed these secrets?
Oh, it was such a relief. Yes. You know, and I think that's what people experience is that they realize that holding that secret is such a burden.
Yeah.
It's a lot more of a burden than whatever they imagine is going to happen when they reveal the secret.
Right.
And couples have that, you know, as we're talking about relationships. Yeah. They have so many secrets that they're afraid to bring into the relationship. And they're not secrets that, you know, they're secrets like I'm cheating or things like that. They're more secrets about themselves, that they're afraid to be seen. And I see that too with people in therapy, and you see that with me and my own therapist in the book, where I think that so many of us are afraid to show the truth of who we are because we feel like people will feel differently about us. And what's ironic about that is that once you show the truth of who you are, that draws people toward you.
Uh-huh.
People then all of a sudden say, oh, I want to come closer to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it has the opposite effect that people fear it might have.
Do you have advice about how to start a conversation like that? Like if you want to talk to a spouse and say, here's something I want to tell you, but it's like you don't want to be judged, or, you know, you want them to listen. You know, that could be difficult to get that conversation going.
Right.
Yeah, I would say, first of all, don't do it in the middle of something else. Don't do it like, hey, we're rushing off to this place. By the way, here's this thing. Yeah. So many people will do that because they feel like, well, you know, we're in the car and we only have 20 minutes.
Yes.
It's perfect.
Right.
No, that's horrible. You want to do it at a time when you're both kind of relaxed and you don't have distractions and you're, you know, at home. And, you know, something where you both feel relaxed and comfortable and there's not a big time crunch. And you can just preface the conversation by saying, you know, hey, there's this thing that I feel really worried about telling you. And it's something about me. And I'm wondering if we can talk about it. And that sets the stage for they know that this is going to be delicate for you.
Right.
And so already they're going to be a little more predisposed to hearing you in a different way instead of just like, hey, let me tell you that, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that people don't realize that often you need to set the stage with the person you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Signal to them that, hey, this is what is about to happen. So nobody is caught off guard. People make the most kind of hurtful mistakes, not intentionally, when they're caught off guard and they don't know how to react to something.
Yes, that is so true. Mm. Yes, you're half distracted. You didn't expect what just came.
Right, and you don't choose
your words wisely, yes.
Right, and so if you can just have that signal first, you can switch gears and be ready, at least more ready, for mm-hmm. whatever the person is going to say. And usually the thing that the person reveals, the other person doesn't find it to be such a big deal. They're like, really? You were afraid to tell me that?
Right.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, they're usually very compassionate.
Right. Well, we love to ask people who come on the show if they have a try this at home tip, just something concrete and manageable that people can do in their own lives to make themselves happier, healthier, more productive, and more creative. Do you have a try this at home suggestion?
I have a couple. Can
I do
two?
Oh, good. Yes, absolutely.
The first is, I think it's really important to get outside.
Yes, great one.
Even for 5 minutes. Just walk outside, clear your head, look at some trees if you can, look at, you know, some interesting architecture if you don't have trees around, breathe in the air, feel the air on your skin. If there's sun out, you know, look up at the sun. I just think it's such a good way to kind of clear your mind in between things. And
absolutely.
We need it. We can't just keep doing task after task after task without clearing our minds.
That's a great one.
So that's the first one. And the second one I would say is whenever you're upset about something, consider what you can do to change the situation.
Mm.
So often we say, oh, this thing is happening or that thing is happening and I have no control over the situation. And we have so much agency and we don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think instead of saying, oh, this thing happened and like, you know, dwelling on the thing that didn't work out, think about what you can do right now in that moment, just one small, tiny step to make your situation better. And it can be anything from, I'm going to stop dwelling on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a simple thing you can do right then and there.
Right.
It can be, I'm going to email this other person, even though I got rejected from this,
uh-huh.
I'm going to email this other person and see if this other opportunity might be available. Or I'm going to research this thing that might help me try something else. Spend 5 minutes just doing something else that might be productive.
Right.
And that will just set you on a different path.
Excellent. Lori, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you. It's so fun to be here.
Yay. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear more great advice from listeners. But first, a break.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep.
Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As your kids get older, some things about parenting get easier. They can dress themselves. They can clean up after themselves, allegedly. Other things don't, like having conversations about money. The fact is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it. That's where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills.
Yeah, Jack has Greenlight, and one thing I love is that it includes a chores feature where you can set up one-time or recurring chores and reward kids with allowance for a job well done. Gretchen, we used to mow the lawn. How much more motivated would we have been if we'd had funds deposited when we completed that chore?
Mm-hmm.
Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/happier. That's greenlight.com/happier to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/happier. All right, Gretchen, we've got more advice from our listeners. What I love is that some of these are extremely concrete.
Yes, they're very, very practical. Elizabeth said, the advice my husband and I give newly married couples is always to have separate bathrooms if you can swing it. Well, that is a luxury, but I think that is a luxury many people would like.
Yes. I do know people where one person uses like the bathroom in the master bedroom and then someone else uses a guest bathroom.
Yeah, that's what my in-laws do. Jamie and I share a bathroom, but yeah, my in-laws do that. Like one goes to a different room. Yep.
And then someone on Instagram said, get a king-size bed. A little extra personal space goes a long way.
Yeah, that doesn't work in New York, but that's a great
we one. Have a king-size bed and I love it.
Yeah. Caroline says, always fight naked. You'll look pretty stupid. Ooh, that's a new angle. I had not heard of that.
Kelly says, I once saw a comedian couple say to just imagine they are five when your spouse does something you don't like. It makes me pause and think if he is hungry, tired, overworked, etc. It also just lets me laugh at some things that otherwise might annoy me.
That's a good one. Like, treat yourself like a toddler.
Yes.
Treat your sweetheart like a toddler. Haley said, I actually love something I read in your book, Happier at Home, and have shared with lots of friends. Every couple should have an indoor game and an outdoor game. Well, this was advice that I got from a friend of mine's grandmother. And I have to say, Jamie and I have neither. I don't like games. And I wish I did, but we don't have an indoor game or an outdoor game.
Neither do Adam and I. Okay, we got to work on this.
Yeah, but it's good advice.
Yes, I agree. We just haven't followed it.
Yeah.
Meg says, be festive and find reasons to celebrate. Create a home that is festive in spirit. That's very you, Gretch.
Yes, that's right. I love that one. Lynn says, when you walk into the door after work or your partner walks in, take time to check in, say hello, etc., and not start off with a to-do list. This is hard for me. I always just want to start checking things off my list.
I think it's so crucial, though.
Yes.
I think if you did nothing but that, your relationship would improve.
Yes, yes.
Gordon says the most important piece of marriage advice is always have your own secret stash of snacks hidden somewhere in the house.
Here's a piece of advice that a college friend gave to me, so I offer it up. She said, never knit your boyfriend a sweater. Her argument was, if you are knitting your sweetheart a sweater, you're going to knit and knit, and it's all this work, and you're thinking, this person doesn't appreciate it. They don't know how hard I'm working. And then you give the sweater, and the person's like, oh, nice sweater. And you're like, you don't appreciate it, you know, and you just have all this resentment. And she's like, you're just setting yourself up for a breakup. So just never knit anybody a sweater. I thought, yeah, it's good advice.
That's funny. Mary Beth says, I ask my sweetheart to do something. I don't tell him to do it.
Yeah, good one. Bren says, I've been happily married for 32 years, and the best advice I received and give is you are responsible for your own happiness, not your sweetheart. And a kind of related from Kim is your partner doesn't complete you, they compliment you. Good advice.
Very good. That's true. I feel like I've been happier in life since I kind of realized that myself. Side note. Christy says, it's not about what you argue about, it's how you argue.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, in the Happiness Project book, I talk about fighting right. How to fight right? Because if you fight right, it's a lot better. Sumi says, the best advice I received when I married my sports-loving husband was every game or match is important. And I think that's really good advice because it's like things that might seem unimportant to me might be very important to my sweetheart. And you just sort of have to keep that in mind that your priorities are not someone else's priorities.
Here's a good practical one. Kimberly says, live below your means financially so you can afford to play.
That's good advice.
Really good.
And then from Instagram, the best thing I learned was from my current partner. She told me early on that I could always ask her anything, but I had to be prepared to hear the answer no. It helped us to develop an interdependent relationship and to be conscious of our own needs as well as one another's.
And then finally, Ebony says, I want to share some advice that my dad told me about recently. I got married in 2019, and my dad and I were choosing a song for the father-daughter dance. One of his suggestions was a song, All You Need Is Love, and he explained to me that he has only ever received one piece of parenting advice, which was just love them. I found this so beautiful, I started to cry. However anyone chooses to raise their children is the right way as long as they remember to love them. Yeah, I mean, he said this at their wedding about parenting, but it's true for romantic relationships, for friendships. It's really a good piece of advice.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the simplest pieces of advice can really sum up everything else. Along the same lines, Carol's grandmother told her, be good to each other. And, you know, just love them and be good to each other kind of says it all, too. This was great advice. We loved it. We got more advice we didn't have time for. So, again, I will post in the show notes to a blog post that'll be a big roundup of everybody's great advice. If there's something you want to add or comment on, let us know on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Drop us an email at podcast@gretchenrubin.com. And the show notes for this will be at happiercast.com/260. So you can go there to get everything related to this episode.
We love this advice. We still want to hear more. We need more.
Send it along. And that's it for this episode of Happier. We hope you heard some great ideas about strengthening your relationships. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks to all our listeners who gave us such great advice. And thanks also to our wonderful guest, Lori Gottlieb. Her book is Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. Thanks to our executive producer, Chuck Reed, our engineer, Bob Tabador, and everyone at Cadence 13. Get in touch. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Our email address is podcast@gretchenrubin.com.
And if you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend and subscribe to us and rate or review us. We so appreciate it. The resources for this week: my 4 Tendencies video course can make a great Valentine's gift and activity to do with your sweetheart. You can learn more about yourself and the other person through video lessons and expert interviews. You can learn more at courses.gretchenrubin.com. And you can follow Elizabeth and me on Instagram. As we often mention, I am sharing stories with my Metropolitan Museum experiment. You can see what I'm doing there. You can see when we check things off our 20 for 20 list. You can find me at Gretchen Rubin and Elizabeth at Liz Kraft.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward. Elizabeth, you know, I had an idea for something I think would make a very fun, very special episode.
What?
We love getting great advice, but I also love when people get terrible advice. We should ask people, like, what's the worst advice you ever got? And people can share their stories of when they were given very bad advice.
Oh, that's good.
We'll do it. From the Onward Project.